final case of the day is Costello against Astrue. Mr. Krause.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Ed Krause, and I represent the plaintiff appellant Florine Costello in this matter. This case involves the application of the deeming provisions and regulations under the Social Security Act, which are found at 42 U.S.C. 402J5 of the Act and 20 CFR section 404.633 in the regulations. The deeming provision provides relief for a Social Security applicant who, as a result of misinformation provided by a Social Security employee, fails to apply for benefits for which they would have otherwise been entitled to receive. The deeming provision would deem that the date for which an applicant applies for benefits is the later of the date on which they were misinformed or the date on which they were otherwise eligible.
But the essence of your case is that when she says, how much am I going to get from either Mr. Costello or Mr. Ramsey, that she is implicitly also asking, am I eligible under both accounts? And apparently, even under your view of the facts, she never actually says the second of those, right? She never says, am I eligible under both Mr. Costello and Mr. Ramsey?
Well, I would disagree with that characterization. Our argument is, and the specific question that she puts before the Social Security employee is, from which of my ex-husbands can I get more benefits?
Right.
And
that's a how much question, though, isn't it?
I respectfully disagree with that characterization. You cannot answer the question of from which ex-husband a person is eligible for more benefits without determining whether, in fact, the person is eligible for any benefits in the first place.
Well, yes and no. I mean, because you could say, assuming I'm eligible under both, you know, which one? You know, people have different earnings records. There are different things that determine the amount of monthly benefits. And I guess, the commissioner is interpreting this regulation much more narrowly, of course, than you believe is appropriate. But she doesn't actually ask about eligibility. Now, it is a little odd that she, you know, the commissioner is willing to agree that she verbally informs the Social Security Administration of the divorce from Mr. Ramsey in this meeting that we're talking about. And it sure looks to me like they didn't pay any attention to that, and they just kept paying wife benefits, and then suddenly when she went in 2002 to change her name, they said, oops, and decided they were going to recoup. So that's a disturbing aspect of this case to me. But she never actually says, am I eligible under both, even though you may be right as a matter of logic that if you're not eligible, then the answer is zero, you know, for Ramsey, and some positive number once 1995 rolled around for Costello. But do you have to work to rule, basically? Do you have to ask all the right questions before this deeming regulation comes into play?
Right, and our position is that that's an unreasonably narrow interpretation of the misinformation provision. That's not what the definition envisions. It talks about the need to make a specific request relating to eligibility for benefits. Here, Ms. Costello goes to the Social Security office 6 months after she's been divorced. Her one mistake was that she didn't inform Social Security at the time of her divorce.
Have any other circuits about this regulation?
No, Your Honor. I wasn't able to find any other circuit court decisions relating to this provision.
It's been around for quite some time. It's a little puzzling to me because this statute and this regulation respond to what had been a drumbeat of arguments to stop the commissioner. They were not going anywhere. You'd expect when Congress authorizes what amounts to estoppel of the commissioner, there would be some litigation to spell out the scope of it. It's a big puzzle to me that neither side cites any appellate decisions on this and very few decisions of district courts.
And I would agree. There just is a real paucity of any published decisions on this, the application of this regulation. I would suggest that the regulation is pretty clear to the extent misinformation is defined in a way that is somewhat.
Were you here for the second case? Two sides agree that the regulation is clear. They just totally disagree about what it means. That's a bad sign.
I, Let me put it this way. The government's argument here is essentially, if Ms. Costello had gone to Social Security and said, from which of my ex-husbands am I eligible to receive more benefits, then she triggers the misinformation exception. Instead, she says, from which of my ex-husbands can I get more benefits? I think that is a distinction that is not a reasonable one to make. Her purpose in going to the Social Security Administration with her divorce papers was to find out who she better off getting benefits from. It is not her job when she walks into the Social Security Administration to have an infallible understanding of the various requirements for eligibility for divorced spouse benefits. It is, however, the job of the SSA employee to ask the right questions and to not answer a question without without determining everything factually that needs to be determined.
And does the record reflect, you know, you get this picture, she goes in, she's got her daughters with her, so at least we have the daughter's testimony as well to all of this, with these envelopes, with the divorce decrees. Does she actually say to the Social Security worker, you know, if you need to look at my divorce decrees, here they are, or anything? Does she reveal, you know, I could lift up this file and you wouldn't necessarily know which case from today it pertained to, or maybe I have, you know, crossword puzzles in it, but it...
Well, her testimony and the testimony of her daughter, and that's the only testimony that's looked at by the administrative law judge, is that she walks in, she's got her Social Security, her divorce papers, and she puts them on the counter in front of her between herself and the SSA employee and says, from which of my ex-husbands can I get more benefits? He asks, or she provides him with, the two Social Security numbers for her ex-husbands.
He types it, and then he says about Ramsey, oh, I see, he signed for you, whatever that means, you know.
Exactly, yeah. And I have no idea what that means, because his having signed for her...
And one would think the point of both the statute and the regulation is that the applicant has no idea what it means. That's why you go and ask, precisely because you can't do it yourself.
The
commissioner's defense here is that since Costello didn't know enough about the law to know what information had to be slid under the man's nose, she's ineligible. That seems rather ignoble.
Was there any effort to find out, because you made a point, well, the screen was facing him and you couldn't see what came up on it. When he accessed this, what was there? Did anybody go in and say, all right, what did he see that day?
No, there was nobody who testified on behalf of the Social Security Administration at the administrative hearing.
Somewhat to the consternation, it appeared, of the administrative law judge, who appeared to be a little annoyed that the commissioner hadn't sent anyone.
Correct.
But it would seem that let's just say there are five different things he could have looked at. Whatever he looked at, if it flashed up and it was real obvious that it said when they got married or something, or it was right there in front of him, as opposed to something else that he just looked at, given an assumption that there's eligibility, and then goes to something secondary and then says, well, this guy paid in more than the other one or something, whatever he said, we have, what was his name, Ramsey or something?
Yeah. Correct, the second husband.
This one, given the assumption of eligibility, this one's a better deal than the other one. I guess that's what he came up with. Was there something more that he was looking at? And you don't know that.
Yeah, the record isn't clear about that. But, I mean, you touch on an important point. I mean, basically the government's position here is that what Costello did was she came in and said, I want you to assume that I'm eligible for benefits under both of my ex-husband's earnings records, but do not, in fact, make that determination. Don't tell me if I'm eligible for that. Just tell me, hypothetically speaking, which amount is higher. I mean, that's the government's position here.
You think that's a little more sophisticated than somebody like Ms. Costello might have been?
I do. I mean, she's a, you know, I want to emphasize that the consequence of the Social Security's decision to not find that this is misinformation is that this 72-year-old woman ends up, of course, filing for benefits on her second husband's earnings record, Mr. Costello, in May of 1992, or June of 2002. And rather than so she's approved. But then they then withhold her entire monthly Social Security check to repay the overpayment from Mr. Ramsey's earnings record. I mean, we're not disputing the fact that she was overpaid on Mr. Ramsey's record. I'm sorry.
I think that would help.
Sorry about that. We're not disputing that she was overpaid on Mr. Ramsey's earnings record. We're saying that this is a classic example of someone going to Social Security, making a specific request about benefits, being provided with misinformation, and as a result, she...
Back farther away from the microphone. I think that would help.
Or push the microphone.
No, don't.
Sorry.
Just don't lean forward over the podium. Then.
Yes, Your Honor. As a consequence of this, she doesn't apply for benefits, and there are 7 years where she's clearly eligible to receive benefits on her first husband's earnings record. If the Social Security employee had correctly answered her question and said, oh, gosh, if you're divorced from Mr. Ramsey, then your marriage didn't last 10 years. You're not eligible for any benefits. You need to apply for benefits on Mr. Costello's earnings record. That's the only correct response that he could have made.
And then there would have been this offset that you...
Correct. And she would have had to pay back less than $2,000 instead of $23,000, which effectively kept her from receiving a Social Security check for 4, 5, or 6 years, during which time she worked 2 part-time jobs to make ends meet. And then finally, just as a matter of interpretation of or misinterpretation of what the standard is, the ALJ's decision refers to this active, a requirement for active misinformation. And as Judge Easterbrook just mentioned, it was in Schweiker versus Hansen that the term active misinformation came up. And Schweiker versus Hansen is the Supreme Court case where the court found that, look, if you're going to get equitable estoppel against the government based on a similar kind of situation where you're misinformed by an employee of Social Security, you better come forward with active misinformation. Okay. But then, as a result, and in response to Schweiker versus Hansen and the harshness of that outcome, Congress passes this definition of misinformation, which does not include active misinformation. Rather, it clearly contradicts it, because it's information which is incorrect, misleading, or incomplete in view of the facts which the claimant gave to the employee or of which the employee was aware or should have been aware regarding the particular circumstances. So... that's just an error of law to hold a claimant to a showing of active misinformation before or under this particular regulation.
Under Social Security law, does the this person like her who gets a divorce, does she have a responsibility to go to Social Security and inform them of that?
She has a responsibility to report the fact that she's divorced. And it's our position that that's precisely what she did.
Well, when she went and asked for which ex is the most?
Correct.
Do you think that's what she was in there doing? I thought it was in because she was changing her name or something.
She was changing her name 9 years later when they realized their
mistake.
That's
when they caught her.
Correct. Okay. But no, in January of 1994, her purpose in going to Social Security with her divorce papers was to ask, okay, I'm now divorced from my 2 ex-husbands. From which of my ex-husbands am I better off getting benefits? And she's provided the incorrect response.
And this figure you've come up with, this $1,800, is what she would have been eligible for under Costello if they'd told her at that point or some point.
Actually, it's after you offset the $21,000 that she would have been eligible under Mr. Costello's earnings record from...
So she was eligible for an amount, something, $1,800. She got $1,800 more than she should have as opposed
to
23.
We can see that there was a small overpayment because she was overpaid more on Mr. Ramsey's account than she would have been eligible for had they properly deemed the application to have been filed in January of 1995.
So apparently he was correct in saying which X was worth more, I guess. That comes down to...
I would say no, because the question wasn't a hypothetical, which earnings record, detached from my actually receiving these benefits is a higher number. I mean, she wants to know, who can I get more benefits from?
I think you've just stated it. The commissioner's position is essentially that she went and asked, which of my 2 former husbands had a better earnings record? And if that's what she had asked, then the answer would have been completely correct. But instead she asked, which of my two former husbands will give me the most benefits? And that's when you need to know that one of them will give you zero benefits.
I would agree. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Krause. Ms. Werfel.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm Kristen Werfel on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. I'd like to go first to the regulation itself. The regulation does have in mind a specific sequence of events that must occur in order for the regulation to have applicability to a certain situation and ultimately to an application. We're talking about 20 CFR section 404.633 subsection C4. It reads, the misinformation must have been provided to you in response to a specific request by you to us for information about your eligibility for benefits or the eligibility for benefits of the person referred to in another subsection for which you were considering filing an application.
But Ms. Werfel, surely on a common sense basis, she is considering and communicates this to the Social Security employee, filing an application on either one of them. She's saying, I happen to have two ex-husbands, not one, or 14, or some other number. I'm considering this. And frankly, in the real world, I mean, the Social Security Administration deals with people of all levels of sophistication, probably more unsophisticated people than CEOs of companies or something, or partners at major law firms who might know how to phrase these things perfectly. And when she says, I want to know, from which of my ex-husbands, from which? She doesn't say, how much am I going to get from Mr. Ramsey, and then only later reveal that there's a Mr. Costello in the picture. So it seems to me she really functionally has asked exactly the question that 404.633C4 contemplates. I'm thinking of filing an application. Am I going to get, more? And if the answer is zero on Ramsey and a positive number on Costello, then she gets misleading information, incorrect information for that matter.
Your Honor, I would say that her question had nothing in no way implicated eligibility.
Oh, she, of course I'm not, it did. I'm not How saying, can you say that? I I'm mean, not, she you're asking her to be you, right. and she isn't. She's
and she would
a
have
layperson.
To be you. I don't think she could be any of us because this 10-year divorce rule was a complete novelty to me. I've never run across it. If I'd asked that question, I wouldn't have known about the 10-year rule unless I'd done legal research. And it's the whole point of this system that you don't expect the claimants to do legal research. That's why they're dropping in and asking.
A couple of things. First, I would say that she didn't phrase a question, do I qualify, can I get...
Well, that's right. She didn't break it down and say, I have a three-part question. A, am I eligible on Mr. Ramsey? B, am I eligible on Mr. Costello?
Right.
C, which will be more advantageous to me, assuming the answers to both A and B are yes.
That is, she didn't do what a second- or third-year law student would have
Indeed.
Done in response to this as a hypothetical question on the exam.
That's true. Indeed, she did not. She also did not, when she said ex-husband, she also did not come to the office saying, I am recently divorced. I don't even know if I can get benefits anymore on this account.
But she did have her divorce papers with her. The commissioner is willing to assume that she informed them, ex-husbands, plural, and that this man pulls up something on the screen and says, I see Ramsey signed for you. And she has described Ramsey as an ex-husband. So this is not a case where she fails to inform the Social Security Administration of her divorce.
Well, she did state that, and the ALJ did.
And the ALJ accepted it. So I think you're stuck with that finding of fact. Maybe you might have wanted to contest it, but nobody showed up to do that. And so the ALJ found it.
He did. But the
Are these meetings recorded, by the way?
In this case, we have no sort of written statement that this occurred.
We do not have in this record a recording of that meeting. My question was general. Does SSA record these meetings? Because I should think there'd be a serious question about people misremembering what they had said to somebody 8 years earlier We know that memory adjusts to accord with one's self-interest, and having actual recordings might help. So that's my question.
Yes, I think in the disability world, most of my work is done in the disability context. In that world, we have what's called reportive contacts, and you do see those in records, where an agency employee will talk to a claimant and record a conversation on the telephone. Certainly, I've seen those in records. Yes.
You're not answering my question, however. Right? If Mrs. Costello were to go into a Social Security office today and have this conversation, would it be recorded? Now, you may not know the answer.
I don't know the answer to that precise question. All I can say is I've seen reports of contact in other cases.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Back to your point, Judge Wood, regarding the question itself. The question, although I understand, did not go through an A, B, and C subsections. The question did not trigger the SS employee to go into an analysis of qualifications. He's asked for a comparison between financial data and between two accounts. A comparison between.
Why would, again, in the real world, why would he think that all she wants is essentially a hypothetical answer? The statute itself, 402J5, uses fairly broad language. Misinformation relating to such individuals' eligibility. We usually understand the term relating to as a fairly, whether it's in an arbitration clause or whether it's in a statute or wherever it is. Certainly, the information he gives relates to her eligibility. He indicates to her, you're eligible and you're going to get this much money, whereas in fact, that's wrong because she's not eligible and she's going to get zero. One more question on his part. When did you get divorced? Would do it. More than 2 years ago or less than 2 years ago? Were you married for 10 years? Were you not married for 10 years? The simplest of inquiries.
Your Honor, going back to the statute, which you have cited, the statute also does say, does give the Social Security Administration, it states, in any case in which it is determined to the satisfaction of the Commissioner of Social Security that an individual failed as of any date. Mm-hmm. In turn, then, the agency, of course, implemented the statute through its regulations with regard to requiring that in any conversation starts with a question.
So it's a magic words requirement. If the person utters the word eligibility, then the commissioner will trigger all of this, but if the person uses a synonym, that's no good?
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that a potential claimant has to use the word eligibility. I would point the court's direction to another example, a set of facts in our record which show when she came to the administration in March of 2002, she wanted to change her name from Ms. Ramsey to Ms. Costello. And when she informed the administration, listen, I want to change my name. This is a change in my status. At that point, the administration said, oh, you're coming to us reporting a change. And in the record, it says that Ms. Costello then attended some meetings, I think two or three, if I can recall, with the administration. And in the course of those meetings, it became clear that eligibility was in question. So and that's an example where she didn't come to the administration saying, am I eligible? She didn't utter those magic words and words that I don't think have to be said. I don't think eligibility has to be said. But she did come and report a change. And
if you don't have a magic words requirement, why doesn't the question, on which of my two ex-husbands will I get the more benefits, require the agent to determine that each of the accounts is non-zero? Right, the accurate answer to that question had to be on Costello's account because the amount you're entitled to on the other one is zero.
Your Honor, my response is that those questions lead down different roads. A question into comparing financial data
lead down different roads,
is,
but when you ask the question, the reason you're asking the question is because you don't know what facts matter to the answer. Right. What the agent did is say, well, I'm assuming the fact that matters to the answer is the earnings record, and I'm going to go look up the earnings record. The agent might have said, well, the first thing I need to look up is not the earnings record, but the dates of marriage and divorce, and then I'll look up the earnings record. But you ask the question in this open-ended way because you don't know what the right thing to look up is. Isn't that the reason you go visit this person in the office?
Anybody who walks into a field office arguably has a question relating to eligibility. I mean, even if you want to talk, if you even consider myself going in to get my new Social Security number if my name changed or something down the line that relates to eligibility, and I understand that's an exaggerated example.
I don't think you get a new number, by the way, when you change your name. But
you get a new name. I'm sorry, a new card.
A new card.
A new card, yes. So why we visit field offices, why we engage in conversations in the broadest of ways, has to do with eligibility. But in order to determine misinformation, this regulation is really getting at any information you receive in response to any question depends upon the question. It looks to the question about why, what am I being asked to look up? What information am I being asked to gather? Ms. Costello asked a question which sent the SSA employee down a road of comparing financial numbers.
I don't know how the question sent him down the road. All the question was is, on which of my two husbands will I get the most benefits, my two exes? And as I say, it was the agent who said, I should start by looking up the earnings record and stop, as it turns out, rather than I should start by looking up the dates and contingent on the dates, then I'll look up the earnings record. Ms. Costello didn't tell him to do one and not the other because she didn't know which mattered.
He was not asked to do one.
Either one.
He was asked which benefit amount was more. Not whether or not she was qualified. And the ALJ,
more than any positive number.
The ALJ, in the ALJ's decision, he characterized this, that the regulation requires a specific request concerning eligibility as opposed to a question presuming eligibility.
I thought you had answered Judge Wood's question by saying the client does not have to use the magic word eligibility. And now you're coming back to saying it has to be a specific request concerning eligibility. Right? As I'm understanding it, the question, which account is greater, implies a request concerning eligibility because you can't know which is greater until you know whether one of them is or both of them are non-zero. When you say an implied request is sufficient, but I don't know. If an implied request is enough and you don't have to use the magic word, why isn't this an implied request?
Simply presenting the SSA employee with an information which would have led him to determine eligibility. That is putting in a folder divorce decrees and putting them on the table, presenting this opportunity to know. It's just not enough under the regulation. And in our brief, and I won't go into detail, but in our brief we do talk about comments to the regulation at the time it was promulgated, where a commenter specifically addressed this subsection of the regulation, saying
the Department of Justice didn't believe in construing text in light of their legislative history.
Unless
it's convenient.
I just point to that to say that here, that getting back to the ALJ's decision, which is on substantial evidence review here for the court, he characterized this as presenting an opportunity to know, as opposed to a question that asked about qualifications for benefits, whether or not she met and satisfied the various requirements for each of the benefits. I did, in response to Judge Wood, I reiterate that the interpretation of the regulation that the government's putting forward here is not that.
Let me come back in a different way. You now seem to be saying that unless the claimant opens up the folder and says, here are the dates, I believe them to be relevant, the employee doesn't have to do anything. But how is that consistent with subsection C2 of the regulation, which talks about, which says, misinformation is information which we consider to be incorrect. In view of the facts which you gave to the employee, quote, or of which the employee was aware or should have been aware concerning your particular circumstances. Now, why shouldn't the employee have been aware of this by asking? On your view, what function does the should have been aware language serve?
Your Honor, I would say that that wasn't that that we don't you can't even look to the information that he provided because the question that was asked didn't lead him there. And that's the answer that I have, Your Honor.
Your position, it seems to me, says unless the applicant sticks the employee's nose in the relevant information, nothing is happening, and Costello fails on your view because she didn't point the employee to the divorce dates. But that leaves the should have been aware language with no function, does it not?
Excuse me. There's no testimony that she actually gave him the folders, that she said I have. I'm sorry, that she gave him the folder, that she said I have them with me. She did lay them on the table. The SSA employee is asked a question and is trying to gather this look at his computer screen, discern what type of information he needs. And
I'm not asking for your characterization of what happened here. I was asking for your understanding of what the language in the regulation means. Under what circumstances does the should have been aware language have any effect?
And my response is that it has effect. It can't be read on its own apart from this subsection C4, which depends upon the specific request, Your Honor. And that is the triggering factor. That sets the stage for everything that comes thereafter, including the information that he should or should have not have known.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Kress? All right. Well, thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow.